Welcome to the Typical Man Podcast. You're joined by yours truly, Mr. Ace Pop, Heckalek, whatever you want to call me, and by my co-host, Houston Good.
And I'm And I'm your co-host, Houston. Some people call me H. Some people call me some other things behind my back that I don't really know about, but that's none of my business. But, you know, here we are. Happy Saturday, gentlemen. How are you? How's everybody?
We're good, man. We're chilling. And by the way, guys, we got a very crazy special. So crazy, we can't even use his real name on the air. So so we got to use a nickname for him. So we are joined by yours truly. He was a police officer. He was in the streets. He's in stock. He's into bullfighting. Now I'm about the bullfighting I'm making up. We are joined by yours truly, Junito.
What's going on? What's going on, fellas?
Nah, he chases chickens too. He chases chickens.
Soon.
Yo, listen. Yo, there's money in that or something like that, I heard.
Absolutely. Listen, let me say this first.
What's up?
I want to say that I'm proud of you guys, that you guys are doing this. You guys are following your dreams. You're making it happen. Papito, H, Isaiah, you guys are doing your thing. I'm happy to be here. Finally, after listening to all the other shows, you know, I waited my turn. I'm here now. So, you know, let's get on with it.
Appreciate the support. Appreciate that. Especially coming from you.
We go way back to Junito, to the point where, just to start this off, this guy used to babysit me before he was a cop or anything. He used to babysit me, but it was, I have to say, Juni, you're great at many things, right? You're great at many things, but you was probably the worst babysitter anybody could ever have. Let me tell you, so Junito is my, just for the sake of this conversation, he is an older cousin on my mother's side. And he, my mom and father, who he was very close to both of them, but especially my father, used to have him, when he was a teenager, babysit me, and I was probably like 8 or 9 years old. Bro, he wouldn't feed me. He would tell me to go eat chips whenever I was hungry. Yeah, yo, he would tell me go to the store. Yo, like, my mom didn't even allow me to go to the store by myself. But, like, Junie would be like, oh, bitch, go to the store. Go to the store. Like, while I just laid up in my mom and dad's bed, like, he owned the place.
Listen, I don't remember it like that, okay? But I hear a lot of stories about me back in the day from other people. And I guess, you know, when people say the same thing over and over again, I guess it got to be true, you know? But it didn't quite go down like that, all right? Now, we are cousins, all right? His mom's mom is my mother's sister. Gets kind of complicated as you say it out loud. So, Papito's my cousin, right? This is back in 1994, all right? I was about 13, 14 years old. Papito was about seven maybe. This was in Queens, New York, Far Rockaway, Red Fern Projects. This is where this kid grew up at, all right? One of the worst projects in Far Rockaway. It only had a couple. That was one of them. So I used to hang with his dad, all right? I started hanging in the streets. His father was a business guy and a street dude, all right? First a street dude, then a business guy, all mixed into one, right? So let's just deal with the babysitting for right now. So Papito was a handful, right? I don't know if he gave you guys his life story yet. But
no, I know I wasn't.
Listen, the kid was a handful, okay? Everything he said about me in the beginning of this conversation was for a reason. He pushed me to be that way with him. So, let me tell you something. If I tell a kid, a seven-year-old, to go to the store by himself, it's because he was getting on my nerves, okay? I got paid. I didn't get paid much either. I didn't get paid no cash. I got paid in chocolate cakes, right? Because his mom made some good, you know, baked goods. So, that's how I got paid. So, for me to, you know, feed the kid and do all the extra stuff, it wasn't in the budget, you know, or the agreement. So, and I did used to chill in his parents' bed, watch TV while he was over there doing his thing.
Well, what were you watching, Junie?
I couldn't tell you.
No, tell me what you was watching, man.
We had a Zap cable box, okay? Back in the day, we had the Zap cable box, and we had all the channels. So, I might have been up there in the thousands, you know, channel 1,000 or something. We all know what takes place in those channels. I was chilling, having a good time. Peter was doing his thing in the kitchen. I don't know what he was, but I know he was in the apartment. So I did my job. Parents came home. He was still alive. He was good.
Right.
That was pretty much it. That's, you know, what else they want?
Yeah, I know back in those days, though, what was the station I used to watch a lot? Yo, MTV Raps was popping back then, like 94, 95, popping. Remember that, Junie?
Yep, absolutely.
We didn't even have those channels though, H. Like I was broke. We were broke. I was broke then.
You had them. You just didn't know. You were too young.
Right.
That's true. I am younger than you guys. I was watching Cartoon Network and stuff like that. Yeah,
correct.
That's true.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, you was too young for your MTV Raps, but all right. Far Rockaway was rough back then, huh?
Nah, it was. It was. You know, it depends on what age you are.
Right.
For you to really to see the grittiness of the area that you live in, you know what I'm saying? Because when you're a teenager or you're 7 years old to your preteens, to your teens and then to your 20s and stuff like that, you're different stages of your life. So depending if you're a street kid, you know, or if you're not a street kid, you're not going to see the stuff the street kid sees because you're going from school to home, and that's you might see a little bit of the fighting. But you're not seeing the kid. You're not seeing the stuff the kid sees when he's outside the projects at past 8 o'clock or you know past the streetlight comes on. You know,
mm-hmm.
And so you don't see that type of stuff. So it depends on what age you're at. But it was rough in Rockaway. I mean, we seen some stuff.
Nah, it was. My mom told me a story that when I was like 3 years old, there was a guy running and somehow he shot at the window where I was playing my toys nearby, and our window like cracked from like the book. I don't know how true that is, but that's what my mom told me. I couldn't believe it. Just some of the stories, man. And it's like you would hear that. Like there was another one where there was a guy. There was a couple of people, America's Most Wanted, from like Edgemere. But I don't know if H has ever been to Edgemere, but that was rated the number one worst projects in New York City for several years.
That project, Edgemere Projects, was known for shooting at cops from the windows, from the rooftops. It was so bad they had a building called the Vietnam Building. And even the people that lived there couldn't go in there. That's how crazy it was. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get robbed going into your own building, which is, you know, stupid of the guys out there hustling because, you know, you're supposed to take care of the people that live in the building. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was that wild and crazy in those projects that, you know, they would shoot at the cops. But then also they had tough cops out there too. They had one cop that used to run around and just like, he used to get it in. You know, I forget his name. I wasn't part of that, you know. These are stories I hear from the older guys, you know. I didn't hang out in those projects. That wasn't my area. But, you know, that was one of the rough projects. The roughest projects in Queens. Well, Far Rockaway. Now, I'm not going to say Queens, but Far Rockaway.
That was saying all of New York. Because I remember watching I was a big America Most Wanted junkie. So every Saturday night, it would have America Most Wanted. And there was a guy nicknamed the Joker. And I don't know, Junie, if you ever heard of him. But it was like a guy that would laugh every time he just shot people. Like he was on a crime spree. This was back in 2000 or 99, like right before we moved from New York to Pennsylvania. But it was like crazy. Like this guy was, and it took them a long time. Guy was just killing an older lady, shooting her, then just laughing at her as he shot her. Like, so it was rough, man. It was rough. Like a lot of people don't know, Far Rockaway was a rough place for where all of us grew up. But I want to segue into this though, Junie, because you had mentioned, you know, you wasn't probably in the streets at first, but like what, obviously Rockaway was a rough place. What led you to being in the streets?
Well, my interest of the streets started back when I was about 13, 14 years old, right? Now, I grew up, my father and mother in the house, but my boys were all in the streets. My boys didn't have fathers. Everybody had a mother, but the majority of them did not have fathers. I think none of them, maybe my best friend had a father, but he wasn't around. So it's not like I have, you know, it's like he didn't have a father. So those guys were all chilling. They were all in a group called BCF, Black Crime Family, right? I was like an associate, if you want to put in those terms or like mafia terms and stuff. I was an associate. I was never really a member of there. So I used to hang around them, and because I was younger too. So they were older than me. I was a little, you know, the young kid in the crew and stuff, but they never treated me that way. They treated me as, you know, I'm hanging out with them. There was no pressure. And there was no, all that stuff that people talk about growing up in different neighborhoods, from the suburbs to the hood. I never had those problems with peer pressure, nothing like that. It was like we're all equal. So these guys used to hang out in, we had in our neighborhood, because, you know, Queens is like, they used to always say that Queens is where they would have grass and trees and stuff like that. Brooklyn had concrete, they call it a concrete jungle, right? And then the Bronx is a whole different ball game. Nobody even goes to the Bronx from Queens. We didn't travel up that way. Usually everybody stayed in their own boroughs, right? Unless you had a girlfriend, you had to, you know, make your way out there. So in our neighborhood, we had mansions, like mini mansions, right? And when I say mini mansions, you know, I don't want you guys to think like Bel Air, you know, anything like that. But it was just like, you know, big, nice houses that used to be there before we moved in, before, you know, like the Blacks moved to the neighborhood, right? The Jews had it. So then, you know, we moved in and we bought the big houses and we lived there. And some houses, like this particular mini mansion, ended up being abandoned, right? So these guys in this group took over that and they were selling drugs out of that mini mansion and stuff like that. So, you know, just going back and forth to school, seeing this, and then seeing the guys, it's a typical story that you see on TV and all those documentaries and stuff like that. It was just like that. You see those guys hanging out, chilling, having fun, and you gravitate towards that. You know, even though I had my parents at home, they both had jobs and everything was all good. You know what I'm saying? But it's, you gravitate, because that's your friends. That's who your friends are. Your friends in the neighborhood, your friends, that's who you're growing up with. So gravitated towards them. And me and one particular dude that is my best friend, Light, we hung tight. We were tight since like 1993, right? And still to this day, even though I don't live in Queens anymore, we were tight and we did everything together. Like and I was lucky to have him as a friend because he told me a lot of stuff. You know what I'm saying? He told me how to roll my first blunt. Not saying that that's a good thing, but you know, we had, this is the fun that we had, you know? I mean, we got into so much trouble without getting into trouble. We did so much. He taught me a lot of stuff. It was just, you know, it was just a part of, that was your neighborhood. That's what you did. You did the bad stuff that came along with living in a neighborhood like that, you know? Thank God we never hurt nobody too serious. But that was my thing. My thing was seeing them, and that's what had me gravitate towards this. And it's not, it wasn't like I saw it and I was like, I want to do that. I want to sell drugs and stuff like that. And that wasn't it. It was just gradual. As you're growing up, you get older, you do different things, you know? And that was it. That was my introduction into the neighborhood, was my boy Light and my sister's ex-boyfriend, Lawrence.
Oh, I never knew that part.
Who was it? Yeah, who was a gun runner in Rockaway.
Yeah. Did your parents ever have an idea of how involved you were? Like at the time, like did they know, or did they tell you, or they just were in the dark on it?
Well, my mom's Puerto Rican, so she's you know, Puerto Rican moms are overprotective, super loving. You can do no wrong. I was her ace, boom, coon. You know what I'm saying? Let me not say it like that. I was her ace, right? I was her baby. I was her middle child, and I was a sickly child. I had grew up with asthma. So, you know, being sick as a baby, you know, and the only one that's sick out of the three kids, you get that attachment to your mom because right. she's always with you. All the right. attention's on me because I'm always sick. Yep. So I was a middle child. I'm not going to say Fred because I don't want to offend my brother and sister, but they know what's up. And, my mom didn't, I don't think she knew until later on. And my father was a street dude as well as your father, Pito. So my father wasn't, he knows what's up. You know what I'm saying? But he never treated me like, he let my father, he gave me his advice, but he let it be what it was.
He let you grow up. He let you grow. Right, right, right.
But he did say, you go to jail, don't call me. I remember him saying that. You go to jail, don't call me. Mm-hmm. But of course, like he says that, thank God I don't have to say it to my son because we're growing up, he's growing up differently. But I would say the same thing to my son, but then, yeah, if you call me, I'm coming to save you because that's just how it is.
Absolutely. Facts. Right.
So. And I think knowing your father, Junie, he probably would have saved you as well. He probably just saying that just because he want to make sure you're straight.
Oh, no, he did, but he thought he did. I was arrested. He did save.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I was arrested, but I did some things, man. Thank God that it wasn't nothing felony related that stopped me from. Moving on with my life and becoming a cop. Well, all of the bad stuff I did, nothing felony related, nothing super criminal. Right. I mean, well, there are some stuff I could have went to jail for a long time, but thank God that didn't happen. Thank God God was there and looked out. I believe in that in my heart. That's what happened. He was there, he looked out, and what would have happened this particular night over the course of a couple of weeks, it didn't happen. And if that would have happened, I wouldn't even be on the phone with you right now. Mm-hmm. So damn. I've been arrested, and I've been lucky enough to get out of all the trouble. But then that, this is a segue into me, being a cop and stuff like that. But just to show you that all the stuff that we're going to talk about, I ended up being still a good person and doing the absolutely. Right thing in life and absolutely. Never, ever crossing right. nobody while being in the streets.
I agree.
As a cop. You know what I'm saying?
You're so crazy, though. You're still crazy, though.
But, well, you have to be crazy to do what I do.
Right, right, right. It takes a certain mindset. I wanted to ask you this, Judy. How you was in the streets for a long time before you became a cop. So, like, how did you and my father become so close? Because you're a relative on my mother's side. And then there was an age gap between you and my father. So how did... Well, obviously, my dad and you were both in the streets, but in separate circles. So how did you guys wind up being so close and, run together? Like, how did that happen?
It's crazy because when you think about it, right, when we're growing up, we don't think of how old the other guy is, especially in the streets. In the streets, never, you're really talking about age.
You're right, Junie. Yep.
Right. Yeah. So you when you hang you out in the streets, vibe. Nobody right, exactly.
Just vibe. That's it. You just buy
nobody knows how old anybody is. Nobody knows really whose last name is what. Nobody knows whose real name is what. You know what I'm saying? That's just how it is. Now, it's different when you grow up if you grow up in the suburbs, okay?
Yeah.
And the suburbs is where my son is growing up now. Those kids, they all know each other's first and last names.
Yeah.
Mom's names, dad's names, then all that. We didn't in the hood, you don't discuss that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Unless it's your main dude, your ace. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know his information. The other guys, y'all cool, but you don't know how old they are. You don't know their real names if they don't use their real names. You know what I'm saying? So me hanging out with your pops, right? It's almost the same age spread as me and my son now. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe with me being my son being a little, he's 16 now. No, he's 16. He's 15. Yeah, it's almost about the same age. Because I think your father was 30-something when he was out there, when we were out there together, right? So what made me gravitate to your father was that, the dude was a cool cat, yo. So me being 13, 14 years old, your father was a Puerto Rican from the Bronx, okay? Straight wild dude growing up. And this is only because I heard these stories. That they told me, his family told me, and friends told me, Your father was a legit street dude, shooting at people in the street. I'm not glorifying it. I'm just this is facts. Shooting at people in the street, kidnaps, cutting faces, jail time, drugs, sex, alcohol, all that. Okay, he did all that stuff. Tattoos on his hands, just like he was a real gritty dude. You know what I'm saying? So no matter where he went, it's like just the way he looked on his own. Them dudes knew that he was a street dude, so he didn't get tested. And if he would have got tested, they would have got, you know, what they were asking for, you know? So being in Rockaway, the way he ran through Rockaway was like he was a boss in his own right. Like these dudes, all the dudes that had something to do with street stuff knew him. They knew Hector. Oh, that's Hector. Yeah, yeah. This and that. You know, he needs this. He's going to get us that. Like, these were deals. Like, he made deals. He knew all these dudes, yo. Even dudes you think he didn't know, if you see him in passing, he knew.
They knew him.
He got the what's up in the car in the summertime when he's driving in his truck, and them dudes were in their drop tops. He got that what's up from the major dudes in the neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? From any projects. So, me seeing that, it was like, damn, why wouldn't I chill with this dude? Like, he's like a top dog around here. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He was into everything. And on top of that, he had a business side to him. So he was on both sides of the fence. And he was able to straddle that motherfucker. Like, I mean, just like magically, you know? So that's what made me gravitate to your father. I wasn't going to gravitate to your mom's. Your mom's a girl. Like, the guys didn't hang out with the girls in the family.
Right.
We did man shit, you know? So the girls had their little section and the guys had their section. So I would never gravitate to any woman in the family. That just wasn't in my DNA to do that. You know what I'm saying? None of the guys when I was growing up did that. We all hung out together. All the boy cousins were together. You know what I'm saying? The girl cousins was over there doing their thing. Unless they needed us, we ain't going over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I can remember a story. So we obviously we lived in Redfern Projects, and me and my mom, we would walk home from school, and we had a neighbor. Now, Junie, tell me if you remember this story I'm about to say. So we had a next door neighbor. The mother had a teenage son. He was 16 years old, but this guy looked like he was 32. He was 6'2", was muscular, all this other stuff. Something happened. Yeah, something, right. So something happened where he, I guess my mom was pretty to him, and like he tried messing with her. She said no. So that, you know, he kept calling her names and, you know, made her feel very uncomfortable every time we had to walk by their door into our home. So one day my mom had enough. And my mom felt scared, and she told my dad about it. Man, listen, our family's crazy. This is how crazy our family is. We all went to Redfern Projects that day. Remember, Junie? It was her sister, my mom's sister, Lillian. It was, I think all my mom's sisters went. You was there. I think your brother was there. Everybody in our family, probably like 15 relatives, was there for that one guy. And I remember my dad and you, I think it was my dad and you, were saying, okay, we want to talk to your son. The mother gave him up because the mother, I think, was having issues with him there anyway. So I remember you and my father took him, and some reason, like, he wanted me to come with you guys. I was like probably 10 years old, probably like 11 years old, seeing this. And we had he had it wasn't the Corvette, he had the Expedition, that's what he had.
Okay.
And you guys sat that guy in the car. Kid was probably like 16, 17 years old, and you guys didn't intimidate him, but he sat him in the front seat. Me and you were in the back seat, and my dad like pulls a gun out goes in his glove to compartment, pulls a gun out on him. Not on him, but he lays it on the dashboard. And he says, "Hey, so you ever been shot in the nuts before?" Well, something like that. It was some, listen, it was some, it was something like you would see out of a mafia movie. Like, it was like something like that. Because at first, H, like, he was talking to this kid, like, asking how he was doing. Like, my dad didn't even do the whole aggressive approach.
I believe like, him, because I knew
he didn't even do the whole aggressive approach. You know, he said, "How you doing? Is your father much in your life? Blah, blah, blah." And in my head, I was like, where is this going? Right? Like, what am I doing here? He pulls the gun out, probably like a little 9mm, pulls it on the door dash. It's like, "You ever been shot in the nuts before?" And then he was like, the kid looked shook. Like, the kid was like, I probably like,
yep.
And ever since then, kid was like, and you know, my dad was like, do we have an understanding? He was like, "Yep." "So are you going to apologize to my wife?" He was like, "Yes." And then he started crying. He's like, "Yo, I didn't mean to, blah, blah, blah." So that whole thing was over with. Yo, ever since then, Junie, and I think you may have said a couple of things to that kid too. Like, mm-hmm. like it was just like that type of vibe. Yo, ever since then, what you guys did, that guy was buying groceries for my mom. That guy opened the door for my mom. You know, like, it was crazy. Yeah,
The kid was a little, he was a little punk in the neighborhood, especially when a dude, when any dude disrespects a woman like that, right? They punks. And any dude beats his wife, punches his girlfriend, they during the time, they suckers and can't fight for shit.
Right, right.
Okay, and if any man presses them, they gonna fold. Mm-hmm. I ain't got no respect for dudes that do that shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this kid was on his way to, you know, being an asshole when it came to women. So his father and I pulled him to the side, had a conversation with him, and he would never do that shit again. And he didn't do it again. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully he hasn't done it ever again. You know what I'm saying? So hopefully we squashed some, you know, some behavior that he would have had later on in the future, and he would have ended up hurting somebody else. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah, I remember that. And there's a lot of things that sometimes need to be reminded of that we did together and stuff like that. But that was one of the things that I do remember, being in a parking lot with this kid and doing that. And the dude was super shook because he was young too. You know what I'm saying? The heck, there was an older dude.
Yeah, he was 16, 17, yeah.
And I was a little older than him. So, yeah. You know, like, intimidation is no joke. I don't even think Hector even needed that, you know,
no.
if he had it. You know what I'm saying? Because of who he was. The kid didn't know who he was, because why would the kid know? He wouldn't, you know, be in any grown folks' business like that, knowing who his mother's husband was. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that was just one of many things that happened while hanging with your father. But your father was also in the surveillance business. He had his own business, and he also worked for a guy, a Jewish dude in Long Island. He worked with a dude named Larry. He worked for him. And while working with him, he was able to come up big time. He used to be, you know, this dude from the Bronx was able to communicate effectively to CEOs of these camera companies, would it be Pelco, Sony, Panasonic. Like, he was able to talk to these, like, and these guys are Asian dudes. You know what I'm saying? And the Asian dudes are just like the black dudes, the white dudes, and whatever other race. A man is a man. What a man wants to do when he comes to another country, where's the girls at? Where's the party? These dudes want a party. Your father knew how to talk to these dudes business-wise and party-wise, and they loved him. He was always the alpha male in the room, first of all. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He always commanded the room. That was his thing. You know what I'm saying? They knew Hector was the man. Hector, you need something, Hector, get it for you. But when he needs something, you got to get it for him. You know what I'm saying? And the whole thing with him was that he didn't give a fuck. When you don't give a fuck in life, yo, but you give a fuck, you know what I'm saying? You get far. People see that. You know what I'm saying? They see that you don't give a fuck. But, bro, I don't care. I can make money either here or I can make money over there. Either you want to make the deal, you don't want to make the deal. The deal I'm giving you is a good deal. Okay, you're not going to get this good deal anywhere else. You know what I'm saying? So the way he used to talk to them, it wasn't disrespectful. It was, I'm letting you know that I'm keeping it 100 with you. Okay, so there's no more haggling now. This is what it is. Like, let's make this deal. You're going to make money, I'm going to make money. And then we're going to go out and celebrate. Okay? These dudes loved him. It was always a yes. And these were
millionaires. Yeah, that's what I was about to. That was what I was thinking of. It was always a yes, Junie. And I asked him, like, how are you so comfortable in that type of setting? And he told me, because I'm what they want in the room. Like, I have something to offer more than any of those guys in there. And I was like, what is that?
He was the most interesting guy in the room.
Yeah. And I used to be like, what is that then? He was like, whatever they wanted it to be. Because yeah. I put myself in a position where I could give insight on things. I've researched enough. I did my homework, you know, because my dad always felt like he had to be that because he had the odds stacked against him. Correct. You know what I mean? Like high school dropout, Puerto Rican, you know, didn't dress like them. So like you said, he had to be better, 100 times better than them, just so he could keep up and eventually be the top salesman of that company. Mm-hmm. Like he was mm-hmm. that, and Junie knows this for many years. So it was a great story, man. It was great seeing him go to work in that setting, on how he carried himself. And just the approach he did, I took a lot from that. So,
I seen your father wear a suit maybe once or twice. Out of all those years, that was it. I don't know why he had to wear it. It was business. It was business related, but that was it. Any other time, he was dressed down. And there's no better way to be than to be dressed down doing business, yo. Because nobody wants to be in a fucking suit 24/7. No. I mean, there's some guys that do because they're fly and they're suits and they're three-piece suits and their suits are $2,000 plus suits, so they like to be in suits. But nah, a hood dude doesn't want to be no damn suit. Nah, I want to be relaxed, chill. And that was one of the reasons why I became a cop as well, because I didn't want to wear no suit. I wanted to always be and dress the way I wanted to dress. I have a career. I'm gonna dress however the hell I want to dress. You know, you can't tell me shit. You know what I'm saying? And that's how your father was. Nobody could tell him shit. That was it. You know what I'm saying? He did what he wanted to do when he did it, and that was it.
And that's what I liked about him also, Junie, was that he never forgot where he came from, and he never made anybody feel like they were less than him.
Never.
Never. Being in that position, he never made anybody feel like I'm competing with you, or you're this. You can't sit at the same dinner table as me. Look who I'm. He never, Isaiah, never Houston went about his business that way. Never. Hey, I'm living a different life now, or they're doing this. That's all a bunch of crock to me. That's all a bunch of bullshit to me. When certain people, friends, family, whoever is in different circles and they're acting a certain way and they use that excuse, it's because I've seen my own father be in that position. Ooh. And he never once treated his family, his friends in a certain way. If anything, my father probably would have been too nice to a certain degree to them. So
really?
Yeah. Yeah, he never was bougie like they say. He was never no. that type.
You know what Mel reminded me of, right? I was telling Mel that I was going to do this interview and talk about your father, right? She was like, you know what? I remember Hector always saying, I was like, what? She was like, he always used to say, scared money don't make no money.
That's crazy. So you go through that all those years in the streets, whether it's with your crew or with my father. Like, always said this too, like, because your story is interesting in this way. Because when I heard this, because knowing you and knowing how you were with my father, like when I heard, I knew you moved away from Rockaway, but when I heard you was a police officer, I think everybody was shocked. Listen, Junie, when I say everybody was shocked, everybody was shocked. Like, mm-hmm. who, Junie? I was like, yeah. It's like somebody told me Junie was a police officer. I was like, wow. And then they mm-hmm. told me out of Baltimore and stuff like that. So what made you change that? Because was it your wife? Was it because you didn't have – did you have your kids at the time when you made the transformation? No. So
no,
was
it – No, I remember when that was happening too. I remember when he did become a cop and he was in the academy, because I used to talk to him from time to time over mm-hmm. the phone, and I was actually thinking about like going down there myself mm-hmm. and applying, because Junie was talking to me about it. He was like, yeah, do it, and then life, you know, new decisions happened, and I never did it. But yeah, but go ahead, fellas. Yep. Carry on.
No, but what made you do that? Like, what made you say, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to change my life around.
Okay, first off, you have to go back a little bit, right? So,
okay.
On what you said, Pito, about people saying that they couldn't believe I was a cop, you're right. A lot of people said, a lot of my boys said, a lot of dudes that watched me grow up and watched me hang out with these guys and stuff like that, they all said, like, yo, shit. When I told them I was going to be a cop, they said, you're going to be a crooked-ass cop. This is what they said. No lie. No exaggeration. Many people say, yo, you're going to be a crooked-ass cop. Mm-hmm. I was like, nah, I'm not going to do that shit. I was like, you know, always, because I know myself. I know my heart. You know what I'm saying? I can get down when I have to, mm-hmm. but I know the difference. Like, I have that common sense, and I also have that switch. You know what I'm saying? I know how much to do and what not to do, because I know if I cross this line, I'm going to get locked up. Mm-hmm. And I've never wanted to be locked up like that for a long period of time. Okay. I've seen other people get locked up. It ain't no fun. Okay.
No, it's not.
So, right. So, you know, back in the early 2000s, you know, mm-hmm. I saw that my life was going like nowhere. Like, I'm like, it really started when 9/11 happened. Mm-hmm. Right. When 9/11 happened, I was at home, okay? I was just out of school. I was home, and, bro, all you saw on TV was school commercials over and over again. College, high school diploma, GED. That's all you saw. Get a job. Just playing over and over again. So the day 9/11 hit, I was at home with my sister, and I always carried a video camera. Right. Even when I was in the streets, like, I have a lot of stuff on camera. Nothing criminal. Maybe after the fact of criminal activity that, you know, we didn't cause. I just happened to have a camera that day, and, you know, like shootings and stuff like that. Guys shot in the face on the floor. Like, I have all that stuff on tape. I just happened to have the video camera with me. So mm-hmm. I have a lot of us partying, girls. I mean, just having fun. And a lot of people don't have that, but I'm the one that had the camera. So I have those tapes of all of us when we were young, in the streets, hanging out, doing stupid kid shit, right? So I saw that. I always knew that I had to get out of my situation, because I got my first apartment in Rockaway when I was 18, right? And I was always hustling since like 15, 16, getting my bread up. I was never broke. I never liked to be broke. I never liked to ask my father for money.
Okay. I don't think you ever worked. Did you ever work at an actual job before being an officer, or no?
No, like, I did.
He did.
I did. I worked in a food service department and shit. I worked in nursing homes and stuff like that. Like, you know, and I also
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I used to work right around the corner from the house on Gateway.
I never knew that.
Gateway's in Far Rockaway, Queens. For those who don't know, right?
Yeah, Gateway. That's where. Yeah.
Right. So I've had, like, we're missing, like, this conversation is missing a lot of stuff, right? But I've had the jobs. I've been working since, I used to drive a cab when I was 15, 16 in Rockaway, illegally. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was out there like that, making money, 24 hours driving the cab with my now wife back then. You know what I'm saying? Like, to where I've had dreams of the dispatcher in my ear telling me to pick up calls while I'm sleeping.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I used to put in hours like that. So I always said to myself, like, yo, I didn't want to keep, I don't want to have three jobs like everybody else around me. Like, why do you have to have three jobs? Just have one good job. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So my goal was, it was always to be a cop, especially after the 9/11. After 9/11 happened, I had a video camera and I was recording the news as it was going on, right? And if you go down to the beach, because we lived on Far Rockaway on the peninsula, so we can go, I live not too far from the beach, right? So you can walk to the beach, and from a certain spot, like up the beach, I live down, 9/11 happened, where you can see it across the river, and like, you know, up in the higher numbers in the beach, was like 100 and something street, 116, 100 and something, right? So if you look across the river, you can see Manhattan Island, and you can see the smoke coming up from the buildings, right? So I'm recording the news, looking at the 9/11 as it happened, you know, real time. And when I saw that, I was so mad. And I was like, I wish I was a cop so I can beat that nigga. I always wanted to be in the chaos. That was one thing about me. I always wanted to be in it, whether it be right. A fight, whatever action it was, I needed to be there.
Right.
Okay.
No, he right about that, people. Like, he really is, like, he's Action Jackson. Like, he. Yeah. Anyway, even, go on.
Even though I was in the streets, right, I still wanted to chase bad guys and just, like, and catch them. You know what I'm saying? And the dudes I knew, some of them knew what my plan was, even when I was young and stuff like that. That's why I really never smoked. I never smoked weed with them. I did smoke weed when I was younger. Didn't really like it, so it didn't really stick with me. Because I didn't like to be sitting in the house tied. Because every time I see my boys smoke, they were sitting on the couch, like sleeping. That wasn't my thing. I didn't want to be vulnerable to nobody.
Right, so, right.
You know, I always wanted to keep my head straight and focused, whatever, right? But I wasn't, you know, I wasn't a party pooper. We still did our thing, right? So 9/11 happened, and at that point, I was like, you know what? The only way for me to be in the mix, I got to be a cop. And then watching 21 Jump Street. 21 Jump Street also got me in. You know, 21 Jump Street was before 9/11. So, you know, in New York Undercover.
21 Jump Street was the shit. New York Undercover was, oh, man, it was popular.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So those two shows, and then in conjunction with 9/11 happening, which was a real event, that spiraled me to becoming a cop. So years later, early 2000s, because that 9/11 happened then, I decided that I wanted to do NYPD, but I couldn't do it because at the time I didn't have my college. And you need 2 years of college to do NYPD. Which didn't really make sense because, you know, if you don't have common sense, you can have, you know, a bachelor's or a master's degree in the BPD, I mean, NYPD, and you can still end up shooting somebody for no damn reason or beating somebody up for no damn reason. It didn't matter if you had the degree or not, because everybody in NYPD has a degree and they still do these things. Shoot people, beat people, violate crimes. You know what I'm saying? So it didn't, a lot of things don't make sense with it, right? So I had to go. My other cousin was here in Maryland, and he was a cop in BPD. So he's like, you know what? Why don't you come over here, do 2 years over here, and maybe you can transfer, do a lot. It's called lateral over to NYPD. I was like, you know what? F it. I got married in 2005.
I remember wedding.
It was nice, right?
Yeah, yes, it was. It was definitely nice.
You spent some change on that.
Yes, absolutely.
Should have saved the money, bought a house, but we did the wedding. You know, it was whatever. So I came down, I packed all the family up, and which was rough because, well, let's go back. I took the test, passed the test. These people called me like a month later. Oh, wow. And at the time, I was in the Hamptons working, right? I was actually working on Jay-Z and Beyonce's summer house in the Hamptons and stuff, right? So we were doing that. I was on the roof, and I actually have a picture of me being on the roof when I got the phone call. I took a picture of myself because I was like, this is my last day working like a jerk off for somebody else, making small amount of money. I'm still working for somebody else, but, you know, like I'm really gaining my independence, all the money, all the health insurance, all that stuff, you know.
I hear you.
So they said, can you come out like in a week? I said, no, I can't come out in a week. I have a job here. Like, I live in New York. I can't just come out there like that. I just, it was like, they said, so how long do you want? I was like, I mean, like, when I say, like, unprofessional, it was unprofessional, okay? And I'm not bashing them. It is what it is.
Right.
So there was like, I was like, give me 2 weeks. I mean, a normal 2 weeks, and I needed more than that. But I said 2 weeks because I wanted the job, right? Mm-hmm. I was excited and nervous at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, 2 weeks, right? So as soon as I hung up the phone, called my old lady. I was like, yo, I got the phone call. I said, we good to go. We got to find someone to live in Baltimore right away. Got to get the U-Haul. Got to get the U-Haul with the car carrier in the back. So we had two vehicles. We had to take the other car down there as well. No, we had one vehicle. Right, yeah, one vehicle. So we had to put that one vehicle on the back of the U-Haul and take it down there and stuff, right? So we ended up going. We packed everything up. We found a spot to live. And we moved down to Baltimore, and I started the freaking academy, bro. Like, it was that fast. It happened that fast. And I knew I had and I did have my son there. My son was brand new. And I was always the type of guy that said that, you know, I want to get married, then have the kid. And I said to myself, I said, I can't raise this kid, you know, on some half-ass start. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to give him a good start. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. I was determined to do it. And let me tell you something. It was rough because I'm not a runner. And you have to run a mile and a half. I was training on the beach night after night, training, running. Never had to run before ever.
You had your asthma, right?
Yeah, I had my asthma. Absolutely. Now, it wasn't that bad. I wasn't like, the, you know, I wasn't in the kid in the bubble no more. You know, I was good now, you know, as I got older, you know, the asthma kind of dissipated, but it never really goes away. So, but I had to train. I had to really train to get this mile and a half down, control my breathing, all that stuff. I had a couple of friends, you know, that have stories that I don't even remember, that they told me that, you know, they were there with me riding their bikes as I was running on the beach. But, you know, I did a lot of training and I really pushed myself to do this. And it was so bad. That when I went down there to do because they do like a 2-day testing for out of towners, and this is back in the day, they might still do it now. It's probably even easy to get on now because of the climate. But I had to run around City Hall a couple times, right? My first time around that damn City Hall, I wanted to quit. Like and my wife and my son is there, and my cousin. I wanted to quit. Like, in my head, I was like, yo, I can't do this. Like, I don't want to do this. Like, I can't. And all because of the running part, right?
Right.
I'm not going to lie. I would have loved to see you run, bro, and just see you bust your ass.
Hey, just no, ain't no busting no ass. There's no busting no ass. You just running in a circle. If you fall running in a circle, then that's a bad look.
Hey, so, I would have had all that on camera, bro.
I wish I would have had it on camera. That would have been good. So I'm running my first lap, I'm like, yo, in my head, I said, I can't do this. But then again, I looked at my son and my wife, and let me tell you something. I was never the quitter. I was never, whether it be in a fight, whatever the hell it was, even if I was getting beat up, I'm not stopping. So when I did the whole running thing, I said to myself, I said, I got to push myself. Like, I was just running months ago, and I didn't stop and quit then. Why am I going to stop and quit now? And then in front of my son and my wife, I can't look like no sucker, and I got to do this for them. Like, I got to push myself to do this for them and myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, I trained for this. So I had to psych myself out, and I ended up psyching myself out, and I made it happen. But because, you know, I looked towards the end. You know how they say pain is temporary. It's all temporary. I got to look at the end. I'll rest. When it's over, that's when you rest, when it's over. And when it was over, I rested. I laid on the floor. I thank God, got up, kissed my wife and kid. I was good to go. I'm in. It starts from there. What you got for me?
Shoot, that's a lot to take in. But so you got past the academy. Now, your first day on the job, obviously you go through a probation period. Correct. So So, again, I'm only going by what I see in movies, but I'm guessing they had you with somebody probably for your first 6 months, and you were probably learning from that person, right? So what did you experience your first day? Because this is something relatively new. You've only going by what you've seen in the movies or what you read through your test. Mm. But what was your mind like the first day on the job? Like, holy crap, like, I am an officer now. You know, any situation could pop off. What was going through your head?
All right, so you are a little nervous, right? I wasn't super nervous because that's just my mentality. Like, I think differently than a lot of people. And then, you know, also I grew up in the streets, so, and I worked in the streets. So it's not that much. All hoods are the same all around the world, just some a little more grittier than others. And, you know, but it's pretty much the same premise. You know what I'm saying? Poor people trying to make it. You know what I'm saying? And there's criminal activity around. So that's pretty much what it was. And then on top of that, you're wearing a uniform. A police uniform, which is, you know, the authority figure in the neighborhood. So you're not going to really have that much of a problem if you know how to carry yourself. And I know how to carry myself. So no, my first day, you do have a training officer and you guys ride around. And his job is to, you know, watch you and see what you do, some of the stuff on your own. In Baltimore, I never had a bad experience with any cop. Anytime, okay, nothing serious, nothing like you see in the movies. My first day was pretty much an easy day. You know, we got out there. I was with my training officer. He had some things he has to do with you that he has to put down in his book, right? It's a book that we have that we carry with us, and we give it to our field training officer, right? Our FTOs, right? So the FTO, we drive around, we take care of all the calls that come out, because when the new guy's on the scene, the rookie, he writes all the reports, right? So that's what it was. In that sector, if we got a call for anything serious, I had to handle it. Would it be a robbery, rape, murder? It was mine, okay? Mm-hmm. Luckily, we didn't have nothing serious that I had to take care of like that. It was all petty stuff, right? So you have to make an arrest, right? You have to show them that you can do an arrest. You could book somebody, stuff like that. So what we were doing, we were looking for somebody to arrest. And it's not that we were looking for anybody, just any random Joe walking in the street. We were looking for criminal activities. So we found one. A lot of you guys are going to say this is wrong, right? But this is how it was back then. And it was illegal. My first arrest was a dude pissing in the street. Which now, thinking about it, I would have never done it now, okay? Because, you know, as you get older, you think differently, stuff like that. When you're a rookie, you don't really got that much of a say.
Right.
You know, so you just do what your field training officer does. Now, I would have never violated nobody's rights. We didn't violate the guy's rights because it was illegal what he was doing. This is why the streets are dirty and nasty, because people just pissing and throwing garbage on the floor and stuff like that, right? Some people might not mind that I did that, and some people might say, nah, that was wrong. You played yourself. Right. But it is what it is. We all done did stuff that we all played ourselves before. So stop the judgment. So dude went to jail. He went, you know, calmly. It was no problems. He understood that he was doing something wrong. So we booked him. That was my first arrest. After that, every other arrest after that was all serious criminal stuff. Drug charges, assault charges, some rape charges. And, you know, dealt with a lot of murders and stuff like that. So my field training was fun, man. It was great because I got the tail end of parking lot parties, like shift change. They call it shift change parties, where you have, you know, you hang out in the parking lot, have some drinks with your coworkers, you get to know each other. Like, it was different then. You know, we all got to know each other. We all, you know, had fun. We drank together. When you drink with somebody, it's different. You know, than just saying hi, beginning of the shift, and bye at the end of the shift, and everybody goes their separate ways. We stayed as a squad together and had a good time a couple of hours before we went home. So, and that was my field training. Like, I was a part of all of that. You know, even going to, like, I remember one time field training, we had to do a business check, right? And this was on the east side of Baltimore, where The Wire, where they filmed The Wire. They filmed The Wire in the east side and west side of Baltimore, I believe, and maybe some other sections of Baltimore, right? Mm-hmm. So, but the east side and the west side were the most grittiest parts of Baltimore City, right? And it was like how you saw in The Wire at certain times. And we had to do a business check. And this was like the best business check to do when you're a rookie and stuff. So we went to the strip club because we had strip clubs everywhere on our post. So we had to do a business check at the strip club. And that was one of the funnest days we had that day, being in the strip club in uniform, just having a good old time, talking to the girls, the bartenders and stuff like that. And it was a business check. So there's a lot of stories like that that, you know, we did and that they did to make it fun for you. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not always serious business. You know, you have to have some fun. You got to break it up sometimes. And that was our breakup time there when we went to the strip club. I had a good old time. So field training lasts for maybe, I think, I can't even tell you, man. I don't know if it was 6 months or a couple of weeks. But after field training, they give you keys and a map. And they slap you on your ass and send you outside. That's it.
Yeesh.
And when you do field training, like say I did field training in the east side, after I finished field training and got used to the east side, they sent me to the west side.
Yeah.
So from the west side, they give you your keys, your map, and they say, go fight crime.
Go. In Baltimore.
In Baltimore. But you don't even know that side of town. You don't know that side of town.
And by the way, though, Junior, I was reading on Baltimore, which I knew anyway, but Baltimore is one of the worst cities as far as crime goes in the whole entire country. Mm-hmm. Like, so where you were, like, it was probably even worse than Far Rockaway, where you were officer.
It was a culture shock, okay? Because even though I grew up in the hood, my hood, our hood, wasn't as bad as Baltimore, yo. When I say,
I believe
when I first
it.
When I first came to Baltimore, it reminded me of New York in the 80s and 90s, yo. Mm-hmm. Okay. And when I say, if you look back at videos of New York in the 80s with the graffiti mm-hmm. and garbage everywhere and poor mm-hmm. people walking around, that's how Baltimore is. It's gotten a little better, but that's how it was up until just, you know, recently when, you know, things are starting to change a little bit here. But it was bad, man. I was like, and roaches everywhere. Roaches and rats everywhere. New York City has their rats. And people understand that the rats are really mainly in New York City, like the island. You don't have rats in, you know, our neighbors didn't have rats. We didn't have no rats in Queens and Far Rockaway. I didn't see any rats growing up. We had roaches, right? But Baltimore has all that, right?
All of that.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. It was so bad that, okay, let me tell you this homicide story real quick, right?
Yeah.
And Pito, keep track because I'm jumping real quick because as
no, we talk about cool.
Okay, I'll so, let you know. All right, so I'm working in the Gilmore Homes, right, in Baltimore City, right? And this is up the block from the Western District. We had a homicide. This is summertime, broad daylight. We had a homicide in the projects. What happened was there was a kid, he opened his house up to the drug dealers, right? So it was a trap house, right? But his father, his grandfather lived there, and his grandfather was on like a oxygen machine, right? So you know the oxygen machines are really flammable. Like you can't have smoke and smoke a cigarette and blunt stuff like that around that type of stuff. But this was a trap house, so anything goes in the trap house, okay? If anybody grew up in the hood and, you know, dealt with the trap, they know that it's whatever that goes on there. Like rules don't apply there. So we get the call for a shooting, and we run down the street, and they said that the story ended up being that the kid let these guys sell drugs in the house. He was tired of them selling drugs in the house. So when he said no more, they came, knocked on the door, shot him in the head, dropped him right there at the door, okay? So when I got there, the body was already removed. All it was a pile of blood, coagulated blood on the floor, right? So I go in there, I'm waiting for homicide to come in, and homicide gets there, so then we go inside the apartment to look for evidence, right? So as we're looking around, when I say, before I walked into that apartment, it was a disaster. It was, I mean, even me growing up with them dudes in the trap, it was not dirty like this. Okay? This house was infested with roaches. The blood on the floor from this kid, right? When I say kid, he was about, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, right?
Wow.
His blood that was on the floor in the pool had roaches all around it. Like it was like it was a watering hole that you see in National Geographic. Except with animals, it was roaches all around the blood. They were eating the blood, right? So we stepped over that. When we stepped over that, there was the bed to the right, on the floor, no frame, double stacked. All in the seam of the bed was roaches. That's where the father slept with the oxygen tank. And you know that when you have health or breathing problems, roaches are not good to have around because, you know,
yeah,
they have like a dander or whatever the hell they have with roaches that make you breathe funny, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a tribute to that guy's, you know, medical issues. I'm sure of it. We go past that, right? We're trying to get through this, right? Even homicide, like this is Baltimore City homicide. And these guys are well trained and well experienced because we had murders almost every day, okay, multiple. Right. So even these guys are like, yo, this is not right. Right. And we didn't have no special clothing to put on or anything like that. We just went in there. Right. So we step over the blood and we're looking for evidence. And I pick a piece of paper off the floor. When I picked the paper off the floor, there was roaches under the paper. They scattered. Okay. So now I'm like, and I don't like roaches at all. Like it gives me the heebie jeebies. Right.
Like
so we're proceeding through the house to get to the kitchen. Homicide opens the cabinet up. The roaches fall out the cabinet.
Good gracious.
We said, nah, we're good. We walked out.
Yeah, I'm out.
We walked out. That was it. That was the end of that investigation for that day. I don't know if they ever went back, but that was it for that day. I never went back into the house. I'm glad they said, let's go. We were gone. Okay. So Let's go back to what you were saying, Pito. What was the question?
So, pretty much being in Baltimore, like it had to be. You've seen some shit there, like as far as being a police officer. What was the most fucked up case, or what was the most fucked up case you've ever probably been a part of? Like you was like, wow, like this shit is.
Because a lot of that stuff, like, doesn't even make the news either.
Yes,
no, absolutely not.
Stuff that you see, that I know that for a fact.
Okay, let me tell you what doesn't make the news that I don't never want to be a part of: child abuse. I don't know if back in the day, my former life, I was abused, or what? I was never abused. Just for the record, I was never abused, right? But it had to be my former life that I was abused because I can't stand anybody that bullies anybody or anybody that hurts a kid, period. Like there's no tolerance for me. So I couldn't be a detective in child abuse because I would be the judge during executioner at that point. And I know me.
You'll break some laws. You'll break some laws.
Yeah, yeah. I'll definitely end up in jail on site.
I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you.
Especially if I know, and I will only do that if I know for a fact. If I caught you in the act,
yeah,
it'd be hard for me, right?
See, that's why, yo, I think that I never became a cop. Like, I had a couple chances, opportunities, and it, like, never worked out that way. Mm-hmm. And I think it was for a good reason. Because there are certain things that I just can't tolerate. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Morally, mm-hmm. You know, outside of the laws. Outside of the laws, like, there are certain things that, like, I think that I would have lost all control of.
Yeah.
And I think back, you know, because I know myself now, and I think about it now, and I'm like, that's probably one of the reasons why that those opportunities that did come up for me, it never happened for me, because I probably would have ruined my life completely.
You know, now, I say that.
I feel you, though.
Right. And I say that now. I say it, but that's just, you know, me talking in retrospect. I would never, you know, kill a suspect on sight, you know. But, I mean, I don't want to be put in that position either. I don't want to be put in a position where I walk into a house and the dude's abusing a little fucking baby girl. You know, like, come on, like, it's just, it's not going to end well.
Right.
It's not going to end well. You know what I'm saying? But, the worst thing, bro, Pito, I've never been a part, see, in my head, it's not bad to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's.
No, I understand that.
It's because I'm different. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I've like, I've stared at dead people, like fresh dead, murdered. Most of the people I've been around were murdered people, right? I've stared at murdered young black men in their face to see if they were going to move or I was going to see anything supernatural happen. You know, things like I'm weird. Like, I'm morbid like that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm all respectful. You know what I'm saying? Because of some of these guys I knew before they died. I knew them. You know what I'm saying?
No, I understand what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? But I've seen brains out of the head poking out the forehead and, you know, blood everywhere, dead babies. And like, I've seen all of that. But to me, I still don't, I mean, maybe the most shocking thing would be the dude I'm talking about with his brains out the front of his head.
What do you think of people when they say cops are too quick to draw the gun to shoot at people, but especially when they talk about, you know, in bad, worse neighborhoods? Like, they always talk about, like, racial discrimination, how cops are with certain ethnicities, and, like, they're quick to draw the gun. I wanted to know your perspective from being a cop. Go ahead.
Can I cut into? Right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Not even being, like, a former cop. Like, I think, like, I get it, right? White cop, he kills a black person, but you have to get down to the evidence and, like, find out exactly what happened, because we see things on the news and we really don't know what happened, because nobody was there, right? So some of those shootings, I will probably, you know, I will say were justified. A lot of them weren't. But go ahead. Go ahead.
So you're right about, you know, it's called Monday quarterbacking, right? Mm-hmm. So especially when you're a civilian, you don't know how our training
it is.
What we have to do in order to get somebody under control, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are speaking from a position that they know nothing of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when we make an arrest, right, it is hard to get even a child, a 13-year-old boy or girl, sometimes even worse with the girls, under control. Mm-hmm. Those girls and boys are straggly. I mean, they're strong. When somebody doesn't want to go to jail, get put in cuffs, you cannot. It's hard to put them in cuffs. Okay, and these are kids. Like, if you had to arrest a 13-year-old or 14-year-old, right? Because there are some badass 13-year-old, 14-year-olds that do need to be in handcuffs sometimes, right? Just for the moment until we get them under control in the car and then into juvenile booking, okay? Because these young kids do bad things. So I'm not talking about an innocent kid. I'm talking about somebody that deserves to be in cuffs, okay?
Right.
So a lot of people say, oh, that's wrong. No, let this kid hit your kid in the head with a bat. You want me to put him in cuffs, right?
Right.
Okay. Exactly. And a lot of people don't put themselves in those, and they don't reverse the situations, okay? Right. The society's, and it's our fault. Society has, the police have made the people in the city this way because it's been happening for so long as far as the abuse and the racial profile and stuff like that. So it's our fault that it's come to this, you know what I'm saying? Where every time we do something, we're judged on it on face value.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, and we're changing that because, you know, we have community policing now. We're changing it. You know, people understand that things are not that serious anymore. It's not that serious. Okay, selling drugs. It's not the end of the world. Okay? He didn't kill nobody at the moment. He's not actually murdering somebody. He's just selling drugs. You can actually get him tomorrow if you can't get him today. Okay? Because he's going to be right back to where he was on his corner because he can't sell anywhere else because that's his corner. He's not allowed to sell on the next corner because that's somebody else's corner. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like I used to teach this because I was, you know, my career, I went from patrol, detective, to sergeant, right? You know, and it's just, oh, I did all drug work when I was in Baltimore City, right? No, so, you know, the whole racial profiling, stuff like that, me, my squad, my crew, we never did that, okay? What we did was we saw that if you were a crackhead driving into the neighborhood and you had Virginia plates, that's how we profiled you. You were a crackhead coming to this neighborhood looking for drugs. It's obvious. People might think it's wrong, but you don't know. You have to ride with us and you will see. You yourself will see, damn, what's this white dude from Virginia doing in this in the West Side? What's he doing here? He clearly looks like a drug addict. Right. This is what you have to see these things, you know. Whether I'm saying it wrong or not, this is what it was. You know what I'm saying? And we were always right. It's just what it was. Same thing if you saw the black guy in a white neighborhood, you know, looking like a crackhead in the beat up old car and stuff like that. You know the difference between a regular black dude in the beat up car, okay, in a white neighborhood, and then a black dude that looks like a drug addict, has the hands, the face, everything says drug addict about him. You're going to investigate, okay, because your job is to serve and protect. And protect property is one of the things that you're supposed to protect besides a life, okay? So we have to pull a car over, ask me, hey, how you doing, sir? You do it respectfully, you'll get no complaints. What happens with it is when you do it and you're being disrespectful. Because just because they're a drug addict doesn't mean they're not human. You still have to be respectful to this human, okay? Right. And that's where it got, you know, at the later years, you know, you have to transition into that. Back in the day, it was different. I don't know anything about what happened back in the day. Those guys were wild. I mean, what you saw was what it was in the 80s, the crack era, even before that. Those are different eras. Mm-hmm. My era, I feel, was a little better. The way we ran the streets, we were respectful with our business. We've never had a problem with a drug dealer after we arrested them. They never said they wanted to kill us. And if they did, they're saying sorry after we had them locked up because we were respectful. We didn't take it personal. A lot of cops take things personal. Mm-hmm. The era before us was different. That was racial stuff back then. Mm-hmm. White cop sees a black person, he's a Negro. We got to take him to jail. That's it. He could be wearing a goddamn suit or jeans. He's a Negro. He got to go. It's not like that no more.
Yeah, I think Junie a lot of times with that too, because I have a theory, and I actually talked to another guy that was an officer too. You have a lot of cops. See, you had the privilege of being in a tough neighborhood, so you had the street smarts. A lot of these cops, especially new ones coming in, they don't have that sense of street smart. So you have a guy that grew up in Nassau County, Long Island, grew up in a white-collar neighborhood. Now his first year on the job is being in a place like Baltimore or being in a tough environment where they have to make quick decisions every second, where they're not accustomed to making. All right, guys, that was part one of our interview with Junie. Here next week, as he gets more in depth about his experiences as far as being a cop goes, crooked cops, the craziest chase he's ever been a part of, and then more. All right, thank you.